Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. It's the What's Your Weird Story podcast. I am your host, Adam Beebe, and with me, as always, it's always my pleasure to be with my co-host, Barry Johnston.
The pleasure is mine, sir.
We are full of pleasure today. Because we've got a really fantastic guest, amazing guest. We're so fortunate to have this guest. If you've been paying attention the past few weeks, we have mentioned his name. He is Dr. Louis Turi. He is a well-known, world-known individual in the UFO community, primarily. He is a multiple-time abductee. He is an author of countless books and articles and essays all over the web. He has a YouTube channel as well. And he is just an interesting guy who's had an amazing and interesting life.
Yeah, he's had a hell of a life. He's really a smart guy. And he came from, you know, a time when a lot of the stuff that he talks about wasn't talked about very much, which makes it even more interesting that he was experiencing all this stuff at that time. And he's just a great guy. And how did he find us again? He found us, right?
Yeah, he found us on, I'd post on a group in Facebook, a Facebook page, a group that, like, you know, for UFOs and paranormal and the like. I go out when I'm trying to find some guest. I'll post on the social media and different stuff like that. And he responded, and I wasn't quite sure, you know, what was, you know, his deal. And then I started talking to him, and I looked into him, and I was like, whoa. So,
yeah,
we've got a super big guest that is, you know, we're just thrilled, just beyond measure. You know, I mean, we love having all of our guests, but, you know, Dr. Turi is definitely in the field. He is definitely a well-known individual.
Yeah, and he's also, you know, this is really kind of an ideology that he's sort of formed over the years. It is really pretty in-depth stuff, and yeah. I found myself just trying to follow along as much as I could, you know. So if you out there, when you're listening to this, if there's a lot of information coming in, just don't feel like you're the only one. So I'll probably go back and listen to these episodes a couple more times to get myself, you know, in that headspace and understand kind of what a little more about what he's saying and where he's coming from.
And Barry mentioned that these episodes, we had a rather lengthy, long talk with Dr. Turi. He took a lot of time to talk with us, and we really appreciate that. So what we're going to do is we're actually splitting it up into two episodes. So we're going to have the first episode today. It's going to focus primarily on his abductions. And then in the following episode, that will be in 2 weeks from today's episode, because next week we have our year anniversary show, we will be focusing on more in depth about these alien beings who have injected themselves into his life and what he's come to understand from them. And he explains all of that. And it gets really deep there. So that's a lot. So we figured that, you know, we'd space it out for you, and gives you, you know, instead of one giant ice cream cone with one giant scoop, you get two still large scoops stacked on top.
Exactly. And that's a good way to handle it too, you know, because it's like chopping it up into two different interviews, you know, gives time for a little breathing room. You know?
Yeah. And it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to digest. It's really great, great stories, and he tells them so well. So, yeah, so without further ado, I suppose that we should get right to it. and say, Dr. Turi, thank you very much for being on our show. We are honored and we appreciate it. What's your weird story?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Adam and Barry. I'm sure we're going to have a good time talking about all exciting things. For sure.
Yes, we will.
All right, let me give you some background on myself, if I may.
Please.
I was born in the south of France. I'm a 70-year-old guy, so I've been around. I was born in Provence. That's where the great prophet Nostradamus was born. However, I got nothing to do with Nostradamus, apart from that I was born under the same stars. And then following my last fifth close encounter, I was literally forced to master his 60th century divine astrology methodology. Long story. So there we go. My extraordinary life experiences brought, of course, interesting information. As I always teach my students, extraordinary experiences breed incredible people that have incredible story to share. So I'm glad to share it with you guys today.
We appreciate it.
We're excited to have you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Barry, again. All right. So let me, with your permission, I can start by telling you how I get acquainted with my first UFO experience when I was 6 years old.
Absolutely.
I am an ADD. In fact, I'm ADHD. I was born with a tremendous amount of physical and spiritual energy, so it's very, very difficult to keep me 5 minutes not moving. So I was pretty handful as a kid. And of course, my parents were pretty disciplinary. And to punish me, they used to sign me in the attic. And then we were living in a house where, standing by miracle, I mean, in 1950, the half of the village was destroyed because of the German bombing. And our house stands by miracle. We had gaps. We had no windows. We had no bathroom. We had no electricity. We had no current water. We had a butcher next door that was just doing his killing right there, and all these guts and blood were going right in front of the house. So the reason why I mentioned that is because we had rats that were bigger than our cats, and we had an army of cats. Wow. So in order for me to keep warm, I always made sure to grab a cat, and then from there made my way up to the attic, and you know, hearing my mother, make sure to blow up your candle, we don't want a fire in the house, Louis. So, and as soon as I was in, my dad came behind and locked the door behind me. You're not gonna go with your brothers and sisters, because we were 18 in the family. It was tough when they separate me from my brothers and my siblings. So anyway, I was there, and sudden enough, I didn't have any cats, and I was upset. I said, I'm going to freeze my butt. And I had this little mattress and a simple blanket on top of it. It was pretty tough during those days, believe me. So let's cut the story short. It's now about, 3, 4 in the morning, and I felt something on my foot. I said, oh my gosh, a cat. You know, it was normal for me sometimes to grab a cat and sleep with him and the dead rat, waking up with a dead rat the next day next to me. That was a normal thing for me. So I didn't want to lose the worms that I had accumulated under my blanket, so I kicked the cat, what I thought was a freaking cat. I had no idea. I was kicking it. I said, he's going to come up. But it didn't. So I said, oh, okay, no problem. So I sat, and then I thought, I'm going to reach it. Oh, my God. Believe me, I got very hot real fast when I saw at the bottom of my mattress three little thing that I describe in 1956. Remember, we didn't have TV, we didn't have radio, we didn't have any UFO researchers. I had no clue what the hell I was looking at. I describe those things as small monkeys with big, huge eyes.
Wow.
And I was there looking at these things, and I was just like, oh my gosh, what is this? What is this? And they were looking at me, you know. And then, of course, what do you want a child to do but go into the blanket and wait until they go?
Right.
So I waited, and I didn't I didn't feel them in the bottom of my feet anymore. I said, well, I don't know, they might be gone. So I got a little bit courageous and I, you know, lift up the blanket and beep, beep out. And one of them was like 2 inches from my face, passed out. I was so frightened. Whoa. I just literally passed out. The next day, I woke up because my mother called me. So I don't think I passed out all night or what the hell happened to me all night. I had no clue. But as soon as I regained consciousness, I started to scream, Mama, and then I banged the door trying to get out. And my mom rushed upstairs and said, what's the hell going on with you? I said, little monkey, big eyes, Mama, little monkey, big eyes. And she was saying, what's wrong with you? You are making this up because you want to be with your brother and your sisters. And I said, no, Mom, it's true. It's true. Anyway. So, you know, I thought I had maybe dreamed something. So until the next night, because I was punished for a week, week at a time. Okay?
Yeah.
Go back there and lock the door behind me to say a little story, but it was not a cat this time. It was just these things around me. I couldn't sleep. Okay. So I just were so frightened. But the good news is, even though that my first abduction took place, I always knew after a while that I would be okay the next morning. So I got used to it. And that led me to teach my student later on when I do a UFO conference to tell people that if you want to keep the negative reptilians away from you, never ever sleep in total darkness. Always have a little bit of light because the reptilians or those dignified robots, these were the grays. They don't have any soul. They don't have any organs. They are dignified robots. And for some reason, they are led by the reptilians, which are demoned, evil, who live in darkness, so to speak. It's the forces of evil, the forces of darkness. So we'll discuss that a little bit more to give you an idea of the different various group of extraterrestrial and their agenda. But that was my first experience, and believe me, it was pretty frightening.
That sounds
I can't even imagine. I mean, that's being just six and just, you know, not even having a good, any kind of reference for this experience, except for these, you know, big eyed monkeys, which would be terrifying anyway, because, you know, monkeys aren't supposed to be in your house, you know, typically, at least in France, you know, they weren't in Oklahoma. I can tell you that much.
Right.
But again, that, for a lack of words, after 6 years old, I could only describe them as little monkey with big eyes. And incidentally, during the same time in 1956, there were a lot of reports all over Russia of the same type of extraterrestrials that looks like little monkeys. Mm. So I just had to throw that in because that's part of the record. So it's there.
So wow. So you say that you've come to realize that they were, you know, what we call grays, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Later on. Later on, so, many years later, yeah.
But, like, could you, in your, I mean, do you remember them now more fully, or, you know, as what they are, or is it still kind of like, as you described it in your mind, it's still kind of like the little monkey kind of a...
No. I realize that what I saw is what I saw. And anytime you see either a ship like I did, go inside a flying saucer like I did, or delegate a gray, what I call a little monkey with big eyes, it's a very, very, very personal experience. There's no words that can really explain what you are witnessing, just the fact, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But later on, as I said, many years later, I realized what I was dealing with. You know, it's like sending a robot on Mars, but instead we're not advanced yet. We don't have mastered the entire artificial intelligence to be able to produce such advanced robotics. But that's what they were.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Robots.
Right. Okay. Okay. So.
Yeah. So I'm trying to wrap my head around this as you're telling your story. So that just means it's a riveting story. I can't wait to hear kind of where this goes, because I'm really interested.
Well, let me tell you something, Barry. Let me tell you something, Barry. being interested means also that you are magnetizing yourself to this type of experience. You have to remember, again, I teach my students, a magnet won't attract a piece of wood. Mm-hmm. So if you're agnostic, if you're atheist, if you're critical, if you're a non-believer, in million years you would never really see or at least you may see a flying saucer like it happened with my brother, 30 feet suspended above our car.
See,
but you're never going to go past that.
I've seen one. Mm-hmm. And it was when I was about 10, I'm guessing around 10 years old, my dad and I saw a UFO floating above a highway about that distance, maybe 30 feet or so. And but it was so long ago, you know, when I think back on it, you know, it's hard for me to remember the details, but there are certain things that I remember. But it was so, it was there so close to me, and I was trying to soak it in as much as I could so I could remember, you know. And
right.
And then the experience passes, and, you know, now 34 years later, when I try to recall it, I try to remember as much as I can, but I wish I could be back there again so I could explain it exactly how it was, you know?
Yeah. As I said, be careful what you wish for, my friend. The future is nothing else.
Sure.
The future is nothing else than the reincarnation of your thought.
Right.
You know, just in case you didn't catch it, I say it again. Your future is nothing else than a reincarnation of your thought. Mm. You're dwelling with superconscious forces that are able to stimulate not only the atomic structure of your body, but leads you on to those experiences. Mm. But again, it all depends of your UCI. And we'll discuss this, why people attract extraterrestrials and why don't. Mm-hmm. Some others don't. So do you want me to go into the second experience?
Please.
Second experience is even more incredible. And again, you know, I'm nearly 70 years old, been around, and believe me, I got better thing to do than to make up stories.
Sure.
This is real.
Sure.
This is very real. Okay. And in fact, in one of my UFO experience, I was subjected to sodium pentothal. I don't know if you heard of that. That's the true serum.
Okay.
Okay. Mm. We'll discuss this later on. So let's move on to the second experience, which is also very dramatic, but this one is also very, very painful.
Okay.
But to the point where, of course, at my age now, I'm still wondering, is it a blessing or is it a curse? Still do not know. The blessing that they gave me is my ability to make well-documented predictions, mm-hmm. earthquakes, tornado, being on George Norrie, telling him 2 weeks from now, be ready for a tremendous natural disaster that would take thousands and thousands of people and force them to relocate. I was predicting Katrina, mm-hmm. to the point where my prediction brought the FBI twice in my house.
Wow.
So, you know, this is serious. This is serious. So is it a curse? Is it a blessing? I'm still delegating it. So now, I was the second experience happened many years later. Yeah, I didn't pick up the date just yet, because I remember my three last experience. I have the exact date and the exact mm-hmm. month, but my first one I was too young.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I was 6 years old. The second one I must have been maybe, let's say, 1982 around 1984, 1985, that's when it happened. Okay. So I was about 35 years old or something like that. That's a pretty long gap. Okay.
Yeah.
So here we go. I was in England, and I was learning how to play piano at the Royal School of Music. And every few months, when I had enough money, I used to come back home and visit my family. Mm-hmm. So I go, it's a Sunday, I arrived home, and I was very happy. I hug everybody, and then wondering where my little sister is. And my mom says, well, she left before you arrived, and she's got to go to work tomorrow. So she works in a mountain over there, you know, in a hospital, people breathing, you know, need fresh air, whatever it is. So I was kind of upset because I couldn't stay long, couldn't wait another week until she came back. So, here she is, She came back and she was upset, very upset. She, oh, mom, I missed the bus. They're going to fire me. What am I going to do? I said, my mom says, don't worry. Louis is going to take you there. And I was more than happy. Okay. So I took my dad's car and then we went. You have to remember, during those days, we had no GPS. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to read a card, a map.
Yeah.
And in the south of France, you know, the only thing you can do, like I always did, is to stop every few miles and ask you directions.
Yeah, right.
That's how it was.
Right.
That was GPS back in the day.
Yeah.
That was a GPS during those days, yes. And that was pretty interesting. So we took off and we drove. And then let's cut the story short. It's now over after 4 o'clock in the morning. I recall very well. I was so tired. And I was driving on top of the mountain. There was snow and ice everywhere, so I couldn't go as fast. And I was hoping to be going in the right direction, and I was desperate, literally desperate for a cup of coffee. And then down the bottom of the valley, I saw some light. I said, oh, interesting. Maybe a gas station. Maybe they have coffee. Yeah. And I just want to remind you that during those days in the south of France, we didn't have McDonald's open 24 hours a day.
Right.
That tells you the extraterrestrials can make scenery as real as can be. And I'm subject to that, I can tell you. So I arrived to what appears to be a restaurant, bar restaurant, open in the middle of the night, and there was absolutely nobody in the parking lot. In fact, there was no parking. Was just enough to put my car there. So I left my car here. I wake my sister up, and then I said to her, okay, we're going to have a cup of coffee and find a direction like we always did. I was happy because we were driving to the mountain forever. So as we walk in, I saw three huge guys at the bar. I saw their back. I'm pretty protective of my little sister. So I said, okay, well, you know what? You're going to sit here by the door. And then I'm going to go and get you Coca-Cola. I would never forget. It was freezing cold, and she asked me to get her a Coke. So anyway, I went to the bar, asked the barman for a Coke, brought it back to my sister, and then was waiting for my cup of coffee. And then as I was waiting for my cup of coffee, I was looking at those guys next to me. I mean, I was kind of amazed. They were looking ahead of them, and they were like, frozen. They had no facial movement whatsoever. They were just looking ahead of them. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I hope those guys are good intention, because my nose was at their belt. I thought they were loggers, you know, they were cutting trees, and then they were so, they made a football guy, monster, looking like a child. They were so big. And it was literally, then all of a sudden, one of them, the one on my left side, turn around and look down, and he says to me, do you want to play cards? So I look at him and I said, no. I want a cup of coffee, and I want to ask direction. I'm very tired. I want to go take my sister to work. And they look at me and say, play cards. You're going to be friends with cards. It's funny because I'm 70 years old. I still do not know how to play poker or the 21. The only card I play, and he was right, is the tarot card. And each hand is a winner. Each hand is a winner. So he was right. But anyway, so he hit it. I said, he's big and he might have bad intention with his sister. I said, I might as well just go with it. So I said, okay. So I put up a card and then I look at it. And then before I could say anything, he was telling me what the card was. So I did it like two or three times and he was doing the same thing. Then I thought, my gosh, this guy is in my head. He can read. It's amazing. He starts to shine in my head. So I thought, okay, I'm going to pick up a card, and I'm going to tell him I'm going to change the nine of diamonds for the queen of spades. Never in my life will I forget that, those two cards. Okay? And he looked at me from his mountain height over there, and he goes, Louis, you're not going to change the nine of diamonds for the queen of spades. And I remember, I just met the guy. He had no clue what the hell I was. He called me by my name. And all of a sudden, I had to hold on to the bar because I felt like if somebody put a screwdriver from my right to my left temple, I was holding at the bar not to pass out. And I asked the barman, excuse me, where's the bathroom? I wanted to put some water on my face. I was afraid to pass out. And the bathroom was not even 10 feet away. So I walked there. The door was open. I didn't close the door. And as I walked there, I felt like if I was chained to this guy in his head, and I was putting cold water on my face, and I was talking to him in my my head. I said, what the hell you are? What the hell you doing to me? You know, I felt so invaded, so fragile. Yeah. But at the same time, the wild side of me took over. And I told him in my head, I don't know where the hell you come from. I don't know where you guys are. But you better effort tell me what you're doing to me. And I'm coming out right now. Okay, and then by the time I walk out, believe me, it didn't take long for me to put some water in my face. It might be 5 seconds, because I was so upset. You know, different, so weird, so attached. And then as I walk out, back to the bar, those guys are gone. Mm-hmm. So I asked the barman, where are they? They just walked out. Really? So I look at my little sister. She was safe, sitting and sleeping. You know, and I went outside and I look and I listen. Nobody. Went back in. I said, hey, who's those guys? He says, I don't know. They must have come with a car. Nobody comes here without a car. I said, there's no car. My car is still here. Where are they? So I listen. And, all right. So anyway, I wake my sister up and I said, let's get the hell out of here. And now listen to this. Okay. That is the last thing my sister and I remember. What I recall very well to that very specific moment, it's 9 o'clock the next day. I'm driving back home. I am at the entrance of my little village where I live.
Whoa.
What the hell have I been all night? Not to forget, for weeks, guys, I had a headache that I would never wish to my worst enemy.
Wow.
For weeks.
Wow.
So talk about an extreme experience right there.
That's amazing.
That is bizarre.
Yeah. That's that, in my mind, I picture a Twilight Zone scene. You know? Like, the whole thing is just, like, super bizarre. You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the good news or the bad news is that I'm a real actor into a real movie. And I tell you what, this was what you call the Men in Black.
Okay?
Because they were dressed in black and they were really, really big. And I saw them again in the inside of the flying saucer. I saw them again. So I thought, my gosh, what's going on?
Wow.
So, you know, imagine that. I thought of these loading monkeys. Then this happened to me. After that, I said, wow, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then I went back to England, my study. And then I graduated from the Rascal Music, and I was able to get my first record from Philips Phonogram in Paris. During those days, we didn't have CDs. We had those press discs. So my first disc was released, and I was on my way to become a recording artist, all the things that I wanted to do because I was in a band. I was a singer.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and I'm a Pisces, so, you know. So basically, all Pisces are very, very artistic. Uh-huh. So basically, what I did is, again, like I always did, because I spent about 11 years in England, I came back home to visit my family. But during those days, my brother, big guy, hotels, restaurants, discotheque, titty bars, ski station. You know, I'm half Italian, half Sicilian, and half French. So my brother got the bad side. I got the good guy. He's the mafioso guy. So he had tons of money, big, huge farm. And I used to stay with him because I like to ride his horses. Mm. And he told me, you know what, you know, come to my discotheque and we can play your record, which he did. And the people were dancing, and then he was very proud announcing, hey, my little brother is a singer, this is his record. So, you know, it worked really good for me. So what we did, we used to take off every single night around 10 o'clock. I went, that is it, 10 o'clock, because it takes about 1 hour or so to get to the discotheque, and then we open around 12 or 11:30, if I can recall now. It's long ago, but all that I recall very well, we had to drive from the farm through some vineyards that would take us to a main road to the highway, and the highway 1 hour later to the discotheque. So there goes that night. And now I remember the date, because I thought, it happened to me twice. I didn't know when. So now I'm going to pick up the date. It happened November 11, 1981.
Okay,
fine. Yes, I remember. because another of my UFO experience after that took place in August 11, 1991. Mm. See how it works?
Yeah, wow.
November 11, 1981, August 11, 1991. So if you do your mathematics, it's always the 11th and the 1. So I don't want to go through this just now, but it's something that just hit me just now. So basically, we were driving like we did every single night. And as we were driving, I was sitting, of course, on the passenger seat. And my brother had a brand new Mercedes. Okay, I'm driving a Mercedes. I'm a Mercedes guy. And they're very reliable, believe me. Mm-hmm. So I saw some light coming from the right side. And I said to my brother, hey, Joe, is there people working in a vineyard? You know, my brother being a Scorpio, you know, to the point and sarcastic and direct. No patience, but stupidity. He goes, Louis, grapes are picked up in September. We are in November. In other words, shut up. Let me drive. So he kept driving. And then all of a sudden, those light becomes closer and closer. And then they end up on top of the bends, and his car just stalled. He's got a brand new freaking Mercedes died in the middle of that little road here. And I said, what the hell? And he was like, what is going on here? And then we both were looking through the windshield, and all we could see is a lot of light. And he goes, oh, must be a helicopter. Oh, no, it was not a helicopter, because I took some flying lesson in California, and the helicopters make a floppy noise, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that thing was making a humming noise. So I said, I'm going to go out. And he says, no, you're crazy. No, you can see the big guy right there. That my other guy, the little brother, want to go out. So I managed to get away from his grip. I opened the door and I went outside. And oh, my God, I couldn't see nothing. It was just bright light. I was looking up, what the hell is this? And then of a sudden, that tells me that they were definitely intelligent flying this this machine. Mm-hmm. They actually turn all the lights off. And then all you hear this kind of a yellow, greenish, bluish light going around me and the car and my brother inside. And it took me a while. I still couldn't see nothing. But after a while, my eyes adapted to the night. And there he was, my friend, a humongous flying saucer suspended 30 feet above that stalled Mercedes.
Wow.
I was in front of my brother's car. I was hitting the hood. Bam, bam, bam. I was swearing every French word I knew. Get the hell out of here. Look, Joe, it's a freaking flying saucer. Of course, he never came out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and then after I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 minutes suspended there, and me going berserk, asking my brother to go out, they turned the lights on again. And that thing, as it came and stop, just took off. And he flew less than 5 feet above the chimney of the farm that was on the other side of the little road. Not to forget that in the vineyard, there is a hell of a lot of power lines, which would be practically impossible for anyone to fly in this area at such a low altitude. Now, that's where it gets better. Go back into the car. The car start again. And my brother says to me, this did not happen. I said, what? He said, this did not happen, Louis. I know a lot of big people. I don't want them to think we're crazy. Right. It did not happen. I thought, my gosh, I'm going to beat him right now. Anyway, I was in such a freaking state because, you know, you are now being forced to realize that flying saucers are not a product of your imagination. It's not something that somebody's talking about. It's real. That's why I said earlier, it's such a very private, you know, experience.
Now, did you
it's
think,
unbelievable.
Now, the third time, this has happened to you 3 times now. Did you think, why me? I mean, did you ever have that feeling?
No. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. Okay.
Not yet. I had confirmation in at the fourth time, but not yet. I was still amazed, even though that he really, really messed me up. I really thought there was something more important in my life than just singing and cutting records when I came back to England after this experience, because it was in my head all the time. The flying saucers could not go away. In fact, if you go to drcherry.com, you can see the first picture of the flying saucers. I had an artist to paint exactly what happened to us. It's on my website.
Cool.
So what happened is we drove to the discotheque. And when we usually arrive every single night, you know, we have the barman there, we have the waitresses, we're setting up everything, we're about to open, we're preparing everything. When we arrived, this discotheque was in full speed going. Oh, now listen to this. In my entire life, I never seen my older brother Joe either smoking or drinking, ever. Okay, he was at the end of the bar with a bottle of scotch and a cigar. In France, we don't get shots. We got our bottle with our names. And when you come back the next day, you have your bottle. You buy the bottle, you don't buy a shot.
Right.
And then I had my bottle too on the other side of the bar. So I got my own bottle and I was smoking also a cigarette. During those days, I was a smoker. And my brother and I, we were looking at each other and we were so spacey. What the hell? And we were talking, and for 30 years, this son of a gun, for 30 years, he never, ever said anything. And then one day, at Christmas table, he finally said, oh, you know what? Our children need to know the truth. Yes, what Louis has said over the years is true. We've seen a flying saucer.
Wow.
Son of a gun. 30 years he waited.
Man.
But after that, as I said, everything changed, you know. But so, I didn't have anything else, but very, very confused. What's going on here after the third time, you know? So
when you were with your brother and the car was, you know, knocked out, stalled out and couldn't go and anything, and you said that you got there to the disco and everything was going on, was there missing time?
Time. Yeah. at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half.
Yeah, because I've had, and I've talked about this on the show as well. I've seen some, you know, UFOs, and but I've had I had a missing time experience once, and it seemed very brief, but at the same time, I'm not sure because I wasn't really paying attention. Right. But I was driving, and I was listening to a song, and it started on a cassette tape, and it started up, and I heard the first few notes. And then it was quiet, and I was very confused and disoriented. Yep. And then I heard the last few notes, and I was like, okay, well, you know, and I didn't know what was going on. So I thought, well, maybe I recorded that song wrong. You know, maybe I missed out something. So I rewound the song, and it was like about a 6-7 minute song, and it was all there. So I don't know what happened, and, I'm okay with that. I just know that it was a very, very weird experience.
It is very, 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 very confusing. Confusing, to say the least. As far as my brother and I, we could not even communicate. We were in the La La Land.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sunday, October. Saturday, October 19th, Enid, Oklahoma, at the Enid Brewing Place. Barry, what's it called?
Enid Brewing Company on the corner of Independence and Maine.
That's right. Hopefully, we got your attention just now. That's right. Saturday, October 19th. You've heard us talk about it. We're talking about it again. Our very first live event, What's Your Beer Story, where we're going to be featuring your three hosts, co-hosts, telling and sharing true life stories of the beer kind, the had too much to drink kind, the hold my beer, etc. kind. And we are inviting you to be there to share your stories as well. You can try out the variety of beers available and made exclusively by the Enid Brewing Company, including co-host Barry Johnson, who is one of the brewmasters there. And also hear some funny stories and have a good time and just catch up with us. It'll be a fun time. We're going to do stuff. It'll be hilarious. It's going to be fun. We'd love to see you. Join us Saturday, October 19th, 2019, Enid, Oklahoma.
I returned to England, and then something again very, very special took place, leading me to the United States. I was in a discotheque, and they were playing my record there, and I was at a bar, and there was this guy, and we engaged a conversation, and this guy was San Diego. He was from San Diego. I said, oh, wow, you're from America. He said, yes. I said to him, wow, show me a dollar. I've never seen a dollar. He says, I don't have a dollar, but I have a quarter. So he put a quarter out of his pocket and he gave it to me. And I still have it, though. It's all.
Oh, wow.
I still have it. Okay. And he says to me, look, here's my card. Okay. if you want to come to America, you know what? I live in San Diego. It's my card, my telephone, and you can join me. I'll be more than happy to help you. Cool. Oh, I said, well, yeah. And I had in my mind before meeting the guy, that's why I said earlier, the future is nothing else than a reincarnation of the thought. Mm-hmm. I generated such a faith in wanting to go to America that I'd attract an American, more of an extraterrestrial than an American, but let's say an American to be normal, okay? And next thing you know, he gave me his quarter and he gave me his business card. And okay, now for years, I used to work three jobs I was living in Eastbourne in Sussex in England. I was working in a restaurant. I was working in a switchboard operator in a hospital and in a mortuary. In order to make the money to pay for all my student and to pay for my study and to pay for my musician and the recording and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I managed to get a recording deal and I had the master tape. Now the next step would be maybe to go to America. And here goes this guy. Now listen to this. I worked my butt off. Okay. Oh my gosh, I really sacrificed to be able to pay for my plane ticket. During those days, a plane trip was like $600. Mm-hmm. Took me forever.
Yeah.
To save 600, it took me a long time. Anyway, I got the money. I bought my two-way plane ticket, and here I am. Oh my God! When I flew over Los Angeles, I was in a panic attack. I said, "Wow!" Knowing that it takes barely 3 minutes to cross my village, that's where I'm coming from.
Right.
On foot, I am now flying above Los Angeles, which is a huge metropole. Yeah. I was, oh my gosh, what the hell am I gonna do? Oh my God! Anyway, like always, when I go down the ground, I ask people to help me, and then goes the Greyhound, and then you got to pay attention to that one because that tells me I was really supposed to be to America. They say, well, take the Greyhound, okay? So. Give him my two suitcase, okay, and I made a mistake. If you travel on foreign ground, never put the address where you come from a foreign country. That's why I have learned. So I give him my suitcase, my entire life, my master tape, my clothes, my little belonging, all that I worked so long in that suitcase. It was so precious to me, and I had a bag, okay? And then I give that to this guy, and he says, okay, no problem, you can get on the bus. Okay, and I got in the bus and I see the guys coming with all these suitcases and I'm looking for mine. Where is my suitcase? Where's my suitcase? And he put all these suitcases and I keep looking. And then I went out, so I said, excuse me, I haven't seen my suitcase. Oh, he says, it has to be inside. I says, no, I saw you when you arrived. This is nothing I can do. The bus has got to leave. Okay, I thought he was already mingling with the other guys. So the next thing I know, this bus is coming up from the underground. He's about to hit the road. I don't know how I did it. I don't know what pushed me to do it or led me to do it. I look inside of the office and there was my suitcase by the desk. I scream, stop, stop. He says, what, stop. He stopped the bus. I went outside. I ran into the office. I grabbed my suitcase and I went back inside of the bus. I told you my suitcase was not there. That tells me there is a divine power that was guiding me to the United States.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now listen to this. Talk about incredible experience that put incredible people that have incredible story to share with you guys. Huh? Now listen to this. I arrived in San Diego, and from there I took another Greyhound. I said, I need to go to this place, and I showed a business card. He said, oh, that's in Mission Boulevard. It's by the ocean. So this is the bus you need to take. So I took my belonging again, and I get into the bus, and the bus dropped me right there on Mission Boulevard. Mm-hmm. So it was April 1984. I remember that. I had a cultural shock. I had a culture shock because I was looking on the beach and I saw all of you guys during those days and me today wearing long shorts. There was no small bathing suit like we have in France. And all the girls, all the girls were wearing bra. Right. I can't believe it. I've never seen girls wearing bra in France. Well, I said, oh my gosh, what am I here in 1930? So, believe me, it was very painful for me to walk in the sun. It was pretty hot in April still. Mm. And I finally locate that place. And then there was, I go inside and I saw a lot of t-shirts, a lot of, you know, bric-a-brac that they sell over there on the beach in San Diego. And there was two old guys there, a guy and his wife, two old people. I said, excuse me, do you think you could talk to John? John? John who? John. Maybe it's your grandson or your son, I don't know. No, there's no John here. We've been here for like, 30 years? I said, is this the address? Said, yeah, here's the address. And again, remember, during those days, we didn't have any cell phones, so I begged them. I said, look, I have only $50 in my pocket. I'm in a totally foreign place here. And John said he was going to help me. Could you please call the number? So she called the number. There's nobody. So it's now 2019. I'm still looking for John.
Wow.
Yes. Wow. Then I spent my first night in a little motel. And the next morning when I woke up, I saw La Jolla Light, a newspaper. I didn't know like 2 or 3 years later I was going to make the front line on this newspaper in the Los Angeles Times, for that matter. I had no idea in good term, okay? Yeah. but I took the paper and I look everywhere and I land on the roommate. The roommate, what the hell is that, roommate? And then I call the number and the lady say, oh, yeah, come. And then we discuss our option. Now, she says it's next door. Well, next door? In a bus or in a taxi? It was like, I don't know, from Mission Boulevard to La Jolla Center. It took me all day to walk. Yeah. I arrived around 4 o'clock in the morning and I left around 9 or something or 8.
Yeah.
And I had my suitcase in my bag. It was so painful or so hard to go there. When I arrived there, she said, oh my gosh, you're fast. You're going to move in. I said, no, this, where are you from? I said, I'm from France. Say, oh, the idea here is to have 4 or 5 guys like you giving me like $300 or $400 and we can have a big house by the ocean. So it was just a project. Uh-huh. And there I was with my suitcase behind her door. And luckily for me, she had a little daughter. Her daughter was very late in French. She was learning French. She said, okay, I tell you what, you stay on my couch until you find something and you teach my daughter French.
There you go. Wow.
That's wow.
Okay. Yeah. That's- now listen to this. 1 hour later, I had a job. 1 hour later, I walk the street of La Jolla and I saw the French gourmet. Oh, somebody who speak French here. So I went to Michel, which is the owner, which is a good friend of mine for so many years. And I said, Michel, I need a job. I said, I was making bread when I was a kid. My first job was a butcher, you know, but my second job was a bread maker. Mm. He said, well, I'll tell you what, I don't have any position for bread maker, but you can be a cleaner or whatever. And he gave me my first job. Of course, I was working without a green card. I was illegal. Yeah. It took me about a year and a half to get my paperwork and marry my my first wife, American, and got my paperwork and pay my taxes. But I arrived totally illegally. We didn't have all this mess that we have today to go through. All excuse my French. So this is basically how I started when I arrived in the United States. So wow. If I was not guided divinely, I don't know what it is to be guided divinely.
That is amazing.
That's
a hell of a story, man.
That's incredible.
You know, I have a book, Adam and Barry. I have a book that's called Beyond the Secret. It's a 600-page book. Not only does it teach you the superconscious power. Mm-hmm. Of you create your reality, but also teach you laughing. And then, man, you can read everything that I went through in great detail. That's a book that I would suggest to your audience to pick up because there's so much to learn. And Amazon critic says when you open this book, you can put it down. That's so great. You had a little story of what this book is all about.
That's it's amazing.
So much more in a book because I recall it took me years to write the book, but it's all there. So now you're talking about 1, 2, 3 experiences, 2 more to go.
Okay.
So if you have any question before I go farther, you go, guys.
No, normally we do, but I'm just wrapped up in your story. I'm right there with you.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's beautiful.
It is.
you can see that I don't make it up.
No, it's,
for sure.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, don't make it up. It's from my heart. You cannot make up stories like that.
Yeah.
It has to be real. You know,
sure.
You have to be passionate, and it has to be real. And even that people may not see me, they can feel the mm-hmm. passion and the emotions. And I'm so happy that you guys are such a beautiful channel that allows so many people to learn that the divine and the incredible truly exist.
Absolutely.
It does exist.
Yeah, it does. I believe that, and I believe what you're saying about, you know, when you put something out into the universe, you put idea, or you put a goal in mind that you would like to see come to fruition. I believe that the universe responds to that. You know, as long as your heart is pure, and
you got it.
And, you know, I believe in that. You know, so a lot of what you're saying is really right on point with the way that my mind works. You know.
Well, let's elaborate, with your permission. Let's elaborate a little bit more on what you just said. Can I?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. When I was in England, I used to work in a bar. Okay. And when I arrived in London, I was living in the Tubes, and I was playing guitar to make a living. And then I didn't know that there was a, you know, mafioso in the Tubes, that you cannot sing in French and attract everybody and make tons of money. Mm. So those guys came along, the mafia in the Tube came along, and we fought, and they broke my guitar and they threw all my stuff on the. So I was homeless for 3 months in Victoria Station, and I was going up and down the telephone, you know, hoping to hear somebody who could speak English. And then one day I saw that lady. And she was carrying a bunch of trash. So I said, I said it in French. Let me help you. And then she understood me. She responded to me in French. She was from Switzerland. Wow. And then she told me, what are you doing here? So most dirty, beard, messy, smelly. And she says, I explained my situation. She said, well, I have a bed and breakfast. So she gave me my first job in England.
Wow.
And I found my first girlfriend there. So the good heart always paid. I was just trying to help her. And she gave me a job. The next thing you know, I went back to Victoria Station and was going up and down, mounting the guard hill, hoping to hear somebody who could speak French. And then I heard this guy, he was the manager of the Grand Hotels in Eastbourne in Sussex. And he told me, and I approached him and I said, I need to understand what's going on around me here. And he goes, I tell you what, we are looking for waiters. So if you want to come and be a waiter, no problem. I hire you. So next thing I know, I say goodbye to the old lady and I went down to Eastbourne. I started. Listen to this, on my mother life. I started in an infested area, cleaning the floor, infested with cockroach and rats. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's how I started, and I end up in the on the bar. I end up at the top place, and more than that, I dated the daughter of the most influential guy that was throwing those huge conferences in the Grand Hotel, and I was eating in the top ballroom, and all my friends said, how the hell is Louis doing this? from hell to heaven, literally. Okay, let me tell you a story. When they put me, I always wanted to be a bar manager. I said, I don't want to be cleaning the floor like this. What am I going to do? So there is a place called the Saloon Bar. There is a lot of parties there. And then that night I went there. And then I was at the bar. And then there was this big, huge guy next to me with a big, huge beard, and he was completely drunk, a Scottish guy. Oh, Alfredo, man, give me Alfredo. He was screaming. And then the kid says, I don't mind to give you what you want, but you owe me so much money, you got to pay me. And then to answer him, he got his beer, and he threw his beer. He broke everything, the glass, the balls, and then he jumped on top of the bar with a big knife, and he ran after the kid with a knife. I went on the other side, because I'm from the street. I went on the other side and I faced him and I said, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? By the time he reacted, I got his head, I smug his nose and knock him out. I was bad. I was a kid, I was bad. Like, I'm from the street, you know, I was 14 years old. I was in the street, I had to survive.
Yes.
Still do all that nasty stuff all along. But I was always courageous and work. So next thing I know, I said, oh my gosh, the police came and this and that. They didn't do nothing with me because I escaped. anyone that won't be there. And the next day, the general manager, Mr. Welsh, I'm telling you his name so you can talk to him. His name is Mr. Welsh, he's the director, and he's a Pisces. I never forget that. He was always helping people. One of the most powerful and influential guy, the director of a 5-star hotel. He was in the street giving food to people on his day off. That's what Pisces do. Big, huge heart, like me. Okay, so anyway, he called me in his office, and I said, "That's it." The first thing I said, "Mr. Wells, please, I'm so sorry. I apologize. I should never have done that. I'm so sorry. Please don't fire me. Don't fire me. I really need to stay." And he goes, "I'm not going to fire you. I want to make you a manager." I was in shock. He says, "We need people like you down there."
That's great. That's great. Wow.
So he gave me. So that you know, when I said the future is the reincarnation of the thought, now you understand me a little bit better.
Yes.
Now, I always wanted to be there, and then from there, I met one beautiful girl, and her father was the top transportation company in England that was throwing those thousands and thousands of dollars of party every now and then, and I was invited, and I was eating with them, and I was being served by my friends when I started cleaning the floor.
Wow, that's a mess.
You're talking about crazy stories. In my book is loaded of stories like that. Beyond the Secret, get it, man. You can have fun. All right.
Well, you've written and just a quick break for. A commercial for you, I guess. but you've written several books, and I saw there. How many books do you have out?
Well, let me tell you, I have been writing since 1995. Okay. I have a lot of books, but every day I've been writing. In fact, I never took an English lesson or never took a typing lesson, and I can type faster than when you can read. Mm. So I must have, I don't know, maybe 500 or 600 books. If you actually compile, I mean, you can Google anything. You're going to have tons and tons of newsletters. Every single day I generate either a YouTube video and with it a newsletter. I've done that for years. So the internet is loaded with Dr. Cherry's work.
Fantastic.
But as far as printed book, I have Beyond the Secret, which is my bestseller. I have The Power of the Dragon. We can discuss that later on. I have I Know All About You and God Created a Star. In Asia, predictions. I have a bunch of books. It's all on Amazon. Sad enough, if you buy any books, guys, don't buy it from Amazon, because I've signed a contract, and the True Secret Company is getting the money, not me. I was young when I signed this contract, so they're screwing me. So it's better if you order from my website.
Gotcha. Yes.
That's
cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we'll provide, make sure that there's a link for all of that stuff within the text for the show, so we'll make sure people can get to your website for sure. So
thank you Adam, thank you Barry.
And the girl, the babysitter girl, she picked up the phone, and there was a policeman on the other side, and he said, "We've tracked the phone call, and it's coming from inside the house."
Whoa.
Yeah, dude.
I love those urban legend stories.
Dude, I do too. And you remember the one where the girl, it's always the babysitter or it's the kids making out in Lover's Lane, but there's the one where the girl comes up and she finds the kids are watching TV and she turns them around and their face has SpaghettiOs.
Oh, man. Or the hook guy. Remember the hook guy?
Oh, the hook. The hook was hanging from the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you got a story that is similar to any of those awesome urban legends, we want to hear it. Because, you know, those urban legends, man, they start off as somebody's true life weird story. It's got to be true somewhere. So I guess we're on to number four there.
Yep.
All right.
Number four. So let's turn the clock forward now. I am married, was a beautiful model, absolutely gorgeous girl. And when I married her, I told her, you know what, I have had some crazy experiences in my life, and maybe one day you may be forced to go through that. Little did I know that I was so damn right. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, she was a Taurus, you know, with a divorced now. She was, and for good reason, you know why she divorced me, I'll tell you. So... We were just working. I was doing construction work, and she was doing some work, bank, whatever it is she was doing in those days. And then one day she says to me, "Hey, Annie, I want to go to a beauty pageant in Anaheim, California." So I look at the map and, you know, high five to Catella exit and then to the hotel where the event was taking place. And I said to her, "Okay, so we need to go to bed early, so we're going to take off early and then have your beauty, so maybe you're going to win the beauty pageant, whatever." So we went to bed early, and oh my gosh, I've been married with that girl for about, what, 10 years? Mm-hmm. Never, ever have I seen her behaving that way. In the middle of the night, she woke me up and she screamed. She goes in the bottom of my bed. She's in a fetal position. She's trembling, sweating, screaming, crying, asking me to look everywhere in the house. I say, "What's wrong with you?" I thought I had to call 911, take her to the funny farm, because she was really scaring me. Mm-hmm. Especially never seen her like this. Right. Panic attack like hell. What was she doing? Well, she had a good reason to behave that way for what was going to happen the next day, which I didn't know. So we went back to bed, couldn't sleep. She couldn't sleep. And the next day I said, "It's no point in going there. You look like hell." She goes, "No, I want to go. I want to go. I still want to go." So, okay, well, let's go. So because I was trained to pay attention to the incredible, I said, "Might be something weird in here." So pay attention to the date. And then there I was filling up the tank of my car. It was exactly 8 a.m. when we took off from that station, and we got on high five and we drove north on the way to Los Angeles. Okay. As we were driving, I approached her and I said, "Honey, what happened to you last night?" She goes, "I don't want to talk about it." Oops. Mm. And she turned the radio on. I said, "Well, let's not go there." She was really, really scared. She had no clue what the hell's going on. Okay. Anyway, as we drove, the last thing I remember is a sign under a bridge called Jamboree. That's the last thing I remember, Jamboree. Then we drove into what I classified as a cloud, which I attributed to be something from a marine layer. It happens all the time in San Diego.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but very often. Yeah. So I didn't worry about it. I'm just driving, you know, through clouds. But the problem is I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel the bumps and the wheels in the car. And the next thing I know, I said to my wife, "What the hell? Where are we? We're not in the cloud anymore. It's all bright." And then I'm trying to look at my environment that I don't recognize anything. And she goes, "Come on, pick up your speed. You want 30 miles per hour in the middle of the highway on these bumps, you know, to wake me up." "What the hell? What am I doing at 30 miles per hour?" You know, I was trying to realize what's going on. And then she says, "I haven't seen the sign of Disneyland yet. You know, keep going. You're going to put me late, honey. What are you doing? 30 miles per hour." Anyway, I keep looking around me and I said, "I don't recognize anything. I've been to LA a million times. I didn't recognize anything." Mm-hmm. Okay. So I said, "I'm going to exit." So she didn't want me to. She said, "You're going to put me late. I didn't see LA sign. I didn't see Anaheim, Disneyland, nothing. Keep going." I said, "No, I got to go." So I took off. I end up in a big, huge parking lot, and there was three Mexican guys in the back of their white Toyota truck, and they were having their sandwiches. So parked the car there, and I went to them, and I said, "Excuse me." "Yep. Yeah. Could you tell me where I am, please?" So they look at each other, and it's like, "Don't throw the cabeza, too much spot, you know?" I said, "No." I said, "Where am I?" "Not joking here." He says, "You are at the Los Angeles. You are the Los Angeles Zoo. You're after the city of Los Angeles."
Whoa.
I said, "What?" "Yeah. Okay. All right." And I said, "Excuse me, what time is it?" They said, "Well, it's 9 o'clock. Okay, wait a minute here. Wait a minute. Okay, so I remember clearly driving at least 30 minutes. Okay, so in order for me to drive 90 miles,
yeah,
I was dropped 90 miles north. In order for me to be able to do that, I would have to have a Ferrari, mm-hmm, no traffic, and no cops to stop me.
Right.
And maybe I should be able to do that. Okay. Wow. Okay, now what happened is that, okay? What happened is that I was driving, and then we were sucked into the belly of a flying saucer. And I will give you the detail later on to how I know all that, okay? And then I saw those three guys that I saw years earlier. They came to me, they opened my door, and, you know, it seems like I knew where I was supposed to go, and I left my wife behind, and I told her not to panic, everything is fine. It's like if I had an agreement of some sort. Mm. And then I went into that room, and into that room, there is, you could see outside, and I saw the Earth the side of a football, so I was pretty high on the mothership. Wow. Okay. Wow. And I was there, and then let's go back now. I spoke to a guy when this happened with my wife named Sean Atlanty. He was the, I don't give you names because you can refer to him and find him. He would tell you exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And he recorded the session the next day of what happened to my wife. And he says to me, I have two top hypnotherapists in Victorville in California that are going to hypnotize you, and you might have to have also some sodium pentothal, which is a very powerful true serum drug. And they froze the first frame and they froze the last frame. And after an hour and a half, I didn't move. The only thing you see me is literally sweating bullets, because inside that decontaminated room, I complain of being very, very, very hot. Mm. And you can see on TV me sweating. Okay. So after a while, the decontamination process is taking place. I am allowed to go inside of the belly of the saucer. That's where I see all the grays, what I saw as kids, what resemble those wow. little monkeys. But these are the guys who do the job, the robots. You know, they cut the cows, they're taking care of all sorts of things, the physical. Wow. And then I saw a lot of a big, tall, blonde guy, the same, what I classified again as the MIB, yeah. Or the management, looking at everything. And I knew where to go for some reason. Huh. But as I was going someplace, I look on the big huge screen, and that's where I saw my wife. I saw my wife being operated on. She was laying in a kind of glass table, and the grays, the workers, the robots, the dignified robots, soulless robots, were doing their part. They were actually taking a fetus because she was pregnant.
Oh.
And believe me, I know my wife very well. After 10 years, after that, she showed me above the airline a 2 inches long scar that was not there before. Oh. And the cat is made with like a laser. Now, they took my child. She was pregnant, and you wonder why she divorced me. Now, listen to this. And I know now it's time for me to go to another room for the rest of the story. So I walk into that room, and something came from the ceiling all the way down to my nose. I saw it going down. I saw it before it goes down, before I sat, so to speak. And I have a picture again on my website, drturi.com. If you go there, I had an artist to design what I saw that came on my head, the best way of my recollection under hypnosis, okay? So when that thing came down over my nose, couldn't see nothing, but my entire body, particularly my brain, turn out like into a mixture of electricity, concrete, metal, fire, water. I mean, I had an impulsion that is, there is no word in English to describe what happened, what they did to my head. The next thing you know, I'm 30 miles per hour on top of the highway after Los Angeles when I walk up. And then after that, I went back home and I painted my entire house. You can see again on drturi.com what I did with my house and on my door. I could not help myself. Imagine when my landlord came to get his rent and he saw the entire apartment being painted with UFO symbol and astrology. And then from there, I could not stop reading and studying the work of Nostradamus.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, this is it. I thought after that, this is it. I know my mission now. I have to read the future and help people. And I thought that I was going to be done with extraterrestrials. Wow. I was so wrong, because there is another one after that.
Wow, man.
Oh, man.
That's intense.
This is just... That is very intense.
And that is real, my friend, and that is real. I am one of the most real UFO contactee on the planet. Yet, the reptilians do not want me to be on top of the pile. There is a lot of UFO speakers over there that never seen a UFO in their life. Mm-hmm. They've read things, they watch videos, they have interviewed a bunch of people like me, but they've never seen a UFO.
When you were on... So when you were on the UFO, the mothership, you said that you were familiar with it and you kind of like knew where you were supposed to go. Do you feel like that? What do you think it's because, or do you feel like it was because you had been there before and like several times before, so it was almost a habit, or was it you were being guided mentally?
You said it, the habit.
Okay, so you had been there, because that seems. To me, like, you know, you're like, okay, well, this is what I got to do and all that stuff. And wow.
It started when I was 6 years old, remember? All along, I thought I was going to be an abductee, but I was being prepared. Extraterrestrials do not come in our dense physical world when they feel like they have to use a unique energy. Mm-hmm. And the Galactic Federation of Grand Cosmic Order is very clear. No extraterrestrial must interfere with the human experiences. Mm-hmm. And the reptilians, which are the negative group of extraterrestrial, do endlessly, constantly. They abduct people, they do all sorts of things. And the Draconis, which are the progressive, the gardeners of this world, are the ones who have literally molded me since I'm a child to do what I'm doing today. And I don't think it's over. So the last experience took place in 2012. Okay. My wife wanted to take a pictures of the solar eclipse in 2012. And I said to her, okay, do this, but do not look. Okay, you have to take pictures, but do not look. And I went in front of her, and I turned around, and she started to go like this, click, 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 click. She took 6 shots, and I was going, what the hell are you doing with my arm open? Oh, my God, guys. When we develop the photos, you can go and see them again on my website, drturi.com. You click on a powerful message to the world. You're going to see something that is impossible to Photoshop. You're going to see an orb, which is far away from me, which is slowly but surely getting closer, getting closer, getting closer, entering my third eye and exiting my heart, which is me serving you, serving the world with that supreme cosmic consciousness.
Wow.
When you have the proof of things like that. And since then, as I said, I've been able to give exact data of earthquakes, including the one that took place yesterday. 9/11 predicted well before it happened. Terrorist attack again. That's what brought the FBI twice in my house. Twice they came here. Wow. They thought I was a sleeping cell. And that's where I'm.
What's next? How do the predictions come to you? Just through thought?
I designed a software. Remember, Nostradamus 500 years ago didn't have a watch or a computer.
Right.
So the mathematical jargonized modern astrology does not apply with me. So I had to bring myself, let's say 500 years ago, and say, how would Nostradamus erect a chart? Mm-hmm. So I asked Alouan Software in Los Angeles to modify their software and to give me what I want. Mm. So I'm using a software. In other words, I am a scientist, and my work is repetitive, which means the scientific community should honor the word science and investigate my work, but they would never ever mingle with me because I do better than them all combined. I'm saying I give exact timing repetitively on George Norrie's show, on all my radio show. I give, last time I was on the radio, I give the date of July 2nd, and I say, be ready for earthquake above 6.0. 2 days later, we had a 6.4 and a 6.8 in California.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and I remember
it's on radio. And the earthquakes are taking place. So the last big earthquake that took place, I was on another radio show. In fact, if you want to, I can give you a date on your show too. And then you're going to check it. It's up to you. Whenever you're ready, I can give you those dates.
Let's do that.
Yeah, we'd love that.
So you need to get a pen because it's important to have a pen. I'm going to give you the date for the month of August. Is that okay?
Great. Yes.
Okay.
This will be out on this will be out in around August 20, I think. I think that's it.
Around August 20? Okay. Yeah. So let me give you two dates then for August. If it comes out on the 20th, on the 22nd of August, the keywords is death, drama, crazy people, killing people, like this guy in Texas that killed a bunch of people. I give the exact date for that. Like this crazy kid in California, the one he shoot everybody. It was during one of my windows. So the 22nd, the keywords is death, drama, police, FBI, secret comes to light, and crazy people killing other people. So this doesn't happen all the time. So terrorism, if you want to put the keywords.
Okay.
On the 26th now, that is large earthquakes, okay? 26, the keywords is sudden release of energy and shocking news. Anything to do with the universe, anything to do with tornado, earthquakes, the sudden release of energy, hurricanes, cosmic news will take place. Let me tell you who I give this window to many years ago. Have you heard of William Shatner?
Yes.
Oh, of course.
William, we love William. Very much.
William Shatner said to me, Dr. Terry, I want to put you on national TV. However, before I do that, you need to prove to me that you have a real gift. I said, okay, how do I do that? He says, I want you to give me 5 predictions, okay, in details, and I want you to put it in an envelope and mail it to me in Canada, because that's where he is. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm going to sign my crew, because they have some taping to do in Phoenix. They're going to come to your house. They're going to open that envelope, and they're going to look at CNN. And if your news took place like you say they would, then we'll do the taping, and I'll put you in the all over the world. I said, okay. And you can read the letter that I wrote to him. It's on my website under his pictures. Mm. So those guys came here before they did anything. They opened the letter. They look at CNN and they said, oh, my God, it is real. Then he said, okay. They gave me the green light to go and do the taping. I had to prove to him that I was real. And you can read all that under his pictures. You can click and read our email exchange. The same type of email exchange I sent to the seismologist in Pasadena, saying to them years and years ago, be ready for earthquake well above 7. And on the exact date, October the 8th, 2 7.9 earthquake hit. Dead on, and I said, and you can help you, so we can work together and maybe find the location. Many, many years ago, yet none of them, after doing this since then, deadly accurate, they never have contacted me. That's where we are.
Wow.
Wow.
You know, it's good to put the green where the mouth is. I can say I have direct connection with Draco, the ET that is leading my life now. I just gave you those dates. So comes those dates, you're going to say, holy goosey, he was right.
Yeah.
Because everybody else has said so far.
Right.
Yeah. So we are, for the record, we are recording this on July 31st, 2019. And so you've given us those dates on for August 22nd and 26th.
Correct.
And I can
give you all the dates. If you want to go to September, I can give you another date for large earthquakes.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. It'll be the 9th of September. Okay. And 24th.
Okay.
Two more dates in September for large. I'm only concentrating on large earthquakes. Okay.
Okay.
That can produce tsunami. You need to make notes of that.
Okay. Okay.
Usually, this energy affects also electronics. So it could mean also, like I said in Shatner's TV show, one of my predictions was to be ready for an aeronautic accident. And on that very specific day that they came in my house, we had a helicopter that crashed and killed like 24 servicemen in Afghanistan.
Wow.
So be ready for this type of news.
Interesting.
Wow. So dates, we'll definitely have to check those out.
When did the predictions become a focal point for you? Has that always
since
been a
Draco?
Uh-huh.
Yes, but yes, it's always been in me to make predictions. Remember Katrina, 9/11?
Yeah.
a year before, I wrote it in my book, which is published in great detail what would take place. Just Google Dr. Cherie 9/11, and you're going to read the very specific part of my book when I talk about 9/11. It's very, very obvious.
Yeah.
Katrina, you can go to George Norrie archive and listen to the date. It's in there. I got so many that I lost track. I do this in every radio. Your show give the same type of date. The data that I gave you, the two dates I gave you, I gave it to another radio host. And I'm going to give the same date to my good friend, which is going to have me on her show very soon, Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot.
Great.
Cool.
Great.
Project Camelot. We'll have to look into that. And
I'll do the show on this. I'll do the show on the 7th, I believe, for her, on the 7th of August. We have it set.
So
7 August.
So you believe that the abductions will continue? Is that correct? Or?
No, I'm past the abduction now. Okay. I'm safe. They've been working on me. I'm ready physically, psychically. I won't get scared. So I've been through so much traumatic experience that the incredible cannot scare me. I was prepared psychically, so to speak, to another fifth contact. But it ain't going to be just this time. I think they're going to leave me with something else than something psychic or telepathic.
Right. Interesting.
Okay. They already gave me the proof with those succession of orbs that, I mean, to him and to my third eye, get out of my heart and coming from far away, you cannot duplicate that. You got to recognize there is a divine interaction there. So my next shot is, I don't know, maybe a picture with those guys. I have no idea.
That'd
but
be fantastic.
It's going to be pretty big.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the What You Heard Story podcast. You probably knew that already because you're listening or downloaded to the episode off of your iTunes or your Spotify or whatever place you get your podcast from. We want to thank you for listening. We also want to remind you to like us, follow us, subscribe to us, make sure that you get your new podcast episode every week. We'd also like to ask you to rate and review so that we can grow our audience. We can have more friends. We can have more stories. So thanks for listening to What's Your Weird Story.
That was a lot.
Yeah. And I think people maybe now will understand why we're splitting this up into two episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot to chew on.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like to experience all those things starting from such a young age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it totally changes who you are, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And sent him down a path.
Mm-hmm.
He's more of a inquisitive person and willing to get out there and figure some things out, and that is admirable, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, to me it seems like he's got this sense of adventure as well, because right. He's just like, let's do it. You know, he left France, and he went to England, and then he came here to the States, and he went to California, and not knowing a soul, or at least not really knowing a soul, he met that guy who wasn't really there, you know?
Right, right.
So, yeah, man, what a life, you know?
Yeah crazy.
Yeah.
Just a crazy, crazy, weird existence. And he's had so many crazy, cool experiences. And, I mean, I'm just appreciative that he was willing to come on and talk to us about it.
Yeah, for sure, man. We are very, very fortunate that he agreed and was, you know, generally interested in coming on and doing us a huge favor. But, dude, what about those, like, the Men in Black, you know? That he saw at the bar.
You know, when he was talking about that, do you remember that story that was floating around for a long time about the black helicopters?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure there's more than one of those stories, but I kept thinking about that, too. There was a story that these black helicopters, and it was on the East Coast somewhere, and I don't know if it was in D.C. or if it was down further down south, but story about these black helicopters that there's a big traffic jam on the interstate, and these black helicopters swoop down, and they grab some guy out of a vehicle and just take him off, you know, take him away, and...
Oh, wait, no, I hadn't
heard about that one? Well, no. That one's floating around out there somewhere, but man, it's just... Those kind of stories really do make you think. Again, hey, I can't prove it, and you know, I don't know if that is, that's really not my point. It just makes me wonder about stuff like that, that it could exist, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for real, man. And then, you know, when he talks about, when he was talking about how he was on the road with his wife to the beauty pageant, and then all of a sudden, you know, he wasn't where he thought he should have been. And he was, you know, they're very confused. He had the missing time, right?
Right.
You know, and then it turns out that they had been abducted and taken on to the ship and all of that stuff, man. And that's where he realized, you know, of course, that he had been there several times before. To me personally, because I had my missing time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'm, you know, very hesitant to even look into it past just having recognizing that I had the experience.
Right. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. I mean, because you're really opening the Pandora's box, you know.
Yeah.
Because really, at that point, it's like whatever your mind can conjure up, the possibility could be is kind of where you go, you know.
Yeah.
But in his case, he's got it figured out, man. He's got it all mapped out, man. He's taken his entire life to sort of construct this universe that not a lot of people really take into consideration or think about.
Yeah, he's definitely got a broader understanding of the universe and a broader view of the universe than most of us do. And we'll, of course, be getting really in-depth in that in the next episode.
Yeah.
Man, so many cool things. And even taking out the extraterrestrials and taking out all of that, he still had an amazing life.
Definitely.
You know, so.
Yeah. Fascinating. A fascinating character, for sure.
Yeah, I'm
glad we got to meet him.
Absolutely. Can't thank him enough. Also, cannot thank you, the listeners out there, enough for supporting us through these past 52 weeks. And that's, you know, that's a year. And
a year.
Our next episode is our year anniversary special show. And it's falling on, you know, 1 year to the day that we launched.
That's cool.
Which is really pretty spectacular.
That is cool.
And we're going to be joined for a bit by our... forgot all those titles that I gave you for a second. Our resident Bigfoot expert, our special correspondent, our semi-regular co-host, and voice of the listener, Jeff Hubbard.
That is quite a title, man. That's great.
Yeah, we just get co-host. He gets all that. Right. And he's on here not nearly as much as we are. So.
Well, he needs to be elevated, you know?
That's true. That's true.
You know?
That's how we get him on the show.
That's right. So. That's right. No, that's cool. Yeah, we're trying to do something fun and do something cool for the listeners, a little bit different, break it up a little bit, and it'll be a treat.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to have reminiscing and discussions and talking points and some answering some questions and just, you know, just kind of a breather, kind of a, you know, looking back and then, you know, maybe looking forward and looking around and looking and talking, a lot of talking, mainly a lot of talking, because if it was just us looking, it would be a really boring podcast. Yeah, it'd be very pretty quiet.
It'd be quiet.
We might hear, oh, look, we're going over there.
Yeah. Oh. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you guys want an hour and a half of that every week, we can do that. You know, I mean.
God bless you. We can do it.
But we're not going to be doing that. We're actually going to be talking about things, you know. So tune in next week for that, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And you know, we will be back the following week to start off our second season, our second year, with part two of our Dr. Turi interview, and that's where it's going to get it. We're going to dig in deep. And we got some cool stuff coming up for the next year, including, you know, our live event in October and our first, well, I guess kind of our first international interview beyond, well, I mean, we've had Dr. Turi, right, but he's an American. He's one of us.
Yep.
And we had our write-in from the right. UK, but this will be our first guest from down under in Australia, and that'll be coming up very soon, actually.
Yeah.
And lots of cool stuff and some returning friends, because, you know, people like to come back and talk to us, and we love talking to people, and also a bunch of people we don't know who's going to tell us stories yet, because they haven't come on and we haven't set that up, but that's going to be more. And that includes you. Yes, that's right. You listening right now. You. Oh, you don't have anything? Well, ask your friend. No, you've got something. We know it. Regardless, see you next week and the week after and the week after and forever. We're going to get out of here now, and we will see you next week. In the meantime, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.